Hello and welcome to episode 24 of the Derailed Podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Fred.
Fred, how are you doing today, man?
I'm good, thanks. I'm good. How are you?
I'm a little bit sick, so if I sound a bit weird, that could be why.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I just thought I'd tell you that now once I've entered your house and spread my disease around.
Thank you.
I just went into your bathroom and coughed on all your towels.
Gee, thanks.
Not even Christmas yet either. Yeah, so what are we talking about today? So I guess just to, I suppose, talk a little bit about what we're going to chat about. We wanted to chat a little bit about our online plays.
Yes.
Well, not necessarily the plays themselves, or maybe that too. A little bit casual today, although when is it ever not casual, I suppose. But we wanted to talk about a little bit about our experience of playing online.
Yeah.
And then maybe also talk a little bit about 1830 now that we've been playing quite a lot of it. I think it's the main thing.
Yes.
Yeah. We've been playing online.
Yeah.
And I think I'm getting a lot more familiar with it and how scary it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that we thought that could be interesting. And yeah, we'll take it from there.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. A little bit of news we wanted to touch on, which is quite exciting, I think, anyway. Grand Trunk Games, who just finished up their Kickstarter for 1861-67, which I backed, have announced their next game is going to be 1889.
Yes.
Which is pretty cool. And I was kind of surprised by this because Deep Thought Games originally published it. And then that was licensed from them by All Aboard Games, who was doing it for a while.
Okay.
So it seemed like there was a whole lot of licensing stuff in there. But apparently what happened was Joshua, the guy behind Grand Trunk, was trying to get in touch with the designer who lives in Japan to try and get in touch with him and figure out if he owns the license, because there seemed to be some confusion around it. And funny enough, this guy didn't reply to his messages for something like 6 months, even though Josh seemed to try constantly to get in touch with him because he thought that Deep Thought, I think, owned the license. Yes. But it turns out he owns it and he can license it to whoever he wants.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that's a really cool pickup, though.
It is cool. It's a great game, that.
So. Yeah, I think that's really well-deserved of the whole Kickstarter treatment.
I don't think we know that it's definitely going to be on Kickstarter. I think the assumption is that it will, but I don't think he actually said that it will be Kickstarter.
I'm not sure.
I don't think so.
I imagine he'll do it the same way as he's done 61, 67.
Probably,
I'll ask him if he wants to clarify that. Maybe I can ask him. Presumably it'll get the same sort of production treatment and stuff. And I think it's a great game for it. For me, I've decided that that is my favorite thus far, like beginner game.
Yeah.
I think that's the one I'd choose. But I think the problem with it has always been availability.
Yes.
Like 46 has been a lot more readily available and that people could order it from like regular stores and things like that. You didn't have to have All Aboard sort of like hand make it for you. And that's very intimidating for people who
just want to give it a try.
Yeah, and the associated price and things like that. So I think it'll be very reasonable. 61-67 was crazy reasonable for what it is. And 89 is a smaller game than that. So yeah, if it comes in at a similar price point, I think it'll be awesome.
Yeah.
And I think it'll do very well. And even though I have this like really nice copy of 89, I'm like, oh man, do I want that copy now as well?
I think I might get it. So then, if you want to collect it, you can as well.
I know. I think it's just like you want to support what people are doing, right? Yeah. So I think there's always that element of it as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's going to look really nice. But I like my copy from All Aboard. It's great. So.
Yeah, yours is good, yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's a great one to have.
Mm.
We were saying Chesapeake might fill that role as well, which should be coming pretty soon. Hey?
Yeah.
I think January or somewhere around there.
Okay.
January, February, I think that one's supposed to ship.
Okay.
Yeah, that'll be quite exciting as well. Mm. Keen to try that.
Yes, definitely.
And I'm still waiting for my 1862.
Yes.
All these delays and things like that. But people have been starting to get copies.
So yeah, I've seen some
pictures.
Where
is mine? Bring it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm pretty excited for that. People have been singing that game's praises recently as well. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be cool. I think there's a lot of weird stuff going on there. It sounds fun to play with. So
yeah,
I'm very keen for that.
I'm always keen to try any 1886.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So should we chat about our mails?
Yeah.
That right there is the mail. Now let's talk about the mail. Can we talk about the mail, please, Mac? I'm dying to talk about the mail with you all day, okay?
So I just wanted to start, Galatalol, if I'm saying that correctly, messaged me on Slack, quite involved in the whole 18XX community, knows enough about the games to have designed his own as well. I saw that he's got a prototype circling around of a sort of a spin-off of 18 Island, I think.
Okay.
He can correct me if I'm wrong about that. But he sent me quite an interesting message, which I wanted to share because I thought it was interesting. He said that we had wondered about there being virtually no bankruptcy in Marflow games. And he said Wolfram, meaning Wolfram Janisch, the guy who designs most of them and publishes them, isn't a fan of aggressive play, and he avoids 18xx where you can go bankrupt, hurt another player, or do anything that discomforts another player. Mm. The historical aspect, implementation of technical evolution, building a railroad network is what he likes. Hence, most of Marflow games are run good companies games.
Okay.
This doesn't mean that you can't be mean in his games, but this isn't their intention.
Hmm.
I thought that was super interesting, actually, because the more I've played Marflow games, the more I've come to the conclusion that they're sort of quite operational in nature, that there's often not really a very aggressive stock market, that you need to like very cleverly manage your portfolio a lot of the time and buy into the right shares and get rid of shares at the right time. But it's not necessarily, well, it's not even as close to as mean as something like 1830.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, so Wolfram is one of those train guys. He's one of the train nerds, man. Maybe he's got like the like home setup, you know. We were talking about that. Like, I wonder how many 18xx players have the like model train setups and all that kind of stuff. But I was saying to someone the other day, like, playing them has given me some kind of weird attraction to trains.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I want to put a picture of a train on my wall or something, like an old steam train. I don't know. I feel like I could be a model train guy now. I'm like,
you have to play Factorio. Some really cool trains in
Factorio. Oh, there you go.
Cool things you can do with trains in Factorio.
Now you're getting me. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know what it is, man. Have you had this phenomenon at all? Or are you just totally theme neutral?
No, I've always been kind of interested. Like even board game wise, like Railways of the World, I quite liked and stuff like that.
So, true, yeah.
Yeah. And I've always liked like trains in Factorio. I've been playing that game for years and always wanted to get to the train stage and then build cool train infrastructure with that. So I think I've always been kind of interested in it. Not enough to have model trains or pictures on my wall, but I just find the mechanics of trains fun. So
I often find myself defending the theme of 18xx. I often sort of find myself explaining to people that even though it looks like themeless and dry as hell, that it actually in practice, in my experience, really isn't.
Yeah.
Like all the investing in each other's companies and sort of doing dirty robber baron tricks and like you really do feel like a greedy capitalist bastard trying to get your hands on as much cash as possible. Just to
squeeze as much out of it as you can.
Absolutely. And there's so much like interaction and banter and stuff that comes with that. So I think I've mentioned this before, but I know how dry it looks and sounds, but in practice I've had actually like so many laughs and fun actually playing 18xx.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause there's so many stories and stuff you can tell. So as much as it's like an incredible system and like a brain burner, I actually think the theme is underrated.
Yeah. I think people think it's dry and themeless because of the art and stuff, but that's not really what theme is about always necessarily.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. I think it's more about, I don't know, I guess some level of integration or something like that.
Yeah, it's like, do you feel like you're doing the thing the game is about?
Yeah, and I think in 1886 you really do.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think it's because of that separation, right, where you actually run the companies, but you act as an investor.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think it actually nails that. Mm. It's actually not that dissimilar. It's like a very simplified version of like really doing all of that in a way.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Mm.
Oh, so emails. Okay, so we got an email from Andrew Norman, our latest Patreon. This is funny. So he started this email saying, can I start by saying how jealous I am of your TV license?
Why?
He said, here in the UK, a TV license is mandatory if you watch or record live TV as it is being broadcast. And the cost is £154.50.
Pounds. Wow.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that's annually.
That must be per year.
So but that's still, like $3,000 in our money, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a lot. Wow.
It is a lot, but you do get the BBC.
Yeah.
I just think this is really funny though, because we watch all these BBC shows here, and we're like, oh, the BBC is so great, and like they live in the UK. Like, what is this garbage that I'm paying?
No, but I think I think even if you live there, you still watch those channels that you pay for. Like, we don't really watch the channels we pay for.
Yeah.
Even though we pay a lot less.
But he does go on to say you can own a TV and watch streaming services without paying for the license.
Oh, that's awesome. That's perfect.
Yeah, I wonder how they know. Like, is this an honor system?
It could be. I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder. Like, no, it's just Netflix, I swear.
But don't they have, isn't like more of a cable system there? They don't use antennas, do they? I don't think so.
No, I guess
not. I think even the BBC is like a cable system where you need a set-top box kind of thing. Like,
weren't we supposed to switch over like 30 years ago or something? Actually, not that long ago. How long ago is it not? Like 20 years ago we were supposed to switch?
A long time, yeah.
From like analog to digital. Yeah. It was like a whole thing. And
I think it
like,
might have been delayed when we had the World Cup year because they didn't want people to not be able to watch it. And then it just never got picked up again, I think.
Oh, yeah, it's been so long. Yeah, so we have this. It's basically like an analog signal.
Yeah? It is, yeah. It's just like radio frequency, basically. Yeah,
yeah, so you can stick a pencil in your TV's antenna slot and you can get SABC. Yeah, and we were supposed to switch over to digital and then it just like never happened. Mm.
Yeah.
And he said it was cool to hear your first impressions of Irish Gauge. I think you'll find other cube rail games just as fun, especially as in games like Chicago Express, the money you pay for a share goes into the company and the company money is used to pay for track.
Okay.
Which sounds cool.
Yeah.
I think this makes decisions even more interesting because sometimes you'll actually want to pay over the top for a share because then the company gets more money.
Oh, wow.
Man, I really want to play Chicago Express. Mm. That's the one everyone always says. And I'm so irritated because for ages on Amazon, it was like $12 or something. I don't know why. Really? There was like that time when all Queen games cost like nothing.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is this? I don't know. No. I could only go back. And now I look and it's like $60 or whatever.
Okay.
But I feel like people are playing more train games and it's jacked up the price for everyone.
Maybe, yeah.
Everyone got into it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, thank you, Andrew. And I don't know, I feel like I may want to trade TV licenses, but then maybe I would just also ignore the BBC. I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know. Fred's the Doctor Who fan here, so
yeah,
he can watch it. I can't handle the men like with dustbins on them passing for CGI, but that's just me. Just kidding, guys. I'm sorry. No. All the Doctor Who fanatics are going to come after me. We also got a message from Jacob. Jacob, where are you from, Jacob? Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Oh.
I think it's in Pennsylvania.
PRR.
Oh. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Jacob, I hear you're the most valuable railroad. Yeah. So Jacob actually asked us if we had played any of Mark Derrick's PNP games. So specifically 18GA or 18AL.
No, what is GA and what is AL?
So I know of AL. AL is often cited as sort of like a beginner game.
Well, what does AL mean?
Oh, I don't know. Alabama.
Okay.
I made that up.
Make up one for GA? What was it? G?
Great America. I don't know. What would GA be? What's GA in America?
I don't know.
Yo, I don't know either. Maybe this is all British stuff and everyone's like...
GB, I don't know.
Yeah, but... So apparently, I think these are some of those ones you can use 1830s track to play them as, which makes them quite easy to print. Okay. So I've heard of 18AL before, and I think the reason that I haven't printed 18AL is that by the time I kind of came across it, I heard a lot of people say that it's sort of like once you've played a few 18XX, you won't really be that into it. It's like very beginner-ish almost. That being said, he said he'd recommend 18GA.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know. It could be quite fun. I'm certainly willing to give it a try, especially if it's that easy to print.
Yeah.
That we can just use Rudy's 1830 tiles or whatever.
Only have the one 1830 copy in the group.
And I think it could be fun to play them and give our thoughts on them as kind of beginner games because so many people who listen to this podcast are sort of quite new to the genre. So, yeah, thanks for the suggestion, Jacob. I think I'll definitely check it out again. Yeah, he said we have played some excellent games of these at 3, 4, and 5 players.
Okay.
Yeah, so and I think they're also quite short games. So, yeah, I'm willing to try that for sure.
Yeah.
He also asked if we've used a moderator before, such as Rails, and he gives me a SourceForge address. Yeah, I don't know if you've come across that.
I've come across it. I haven't looked into detail, but it's basically something, the way I understand it, where you can run the bank and all the finances on a laptop or something like that. Yeah,
so he said you can play an expedited 18XX game. He says his group's conflicted because they quite like the tactile feel of manipulating certificates and poker chips.
Yeah, I think I like that as well.
We do as well, yeah. We haven't actually really tried any of them, but I feel like we also have never really wanted to.
Yeah.
I don't know. And then it feels like if you have all the information on one computer, then do you have to keep asking the person, or do you, like, I've seen some people put it up on a screen, like project it onto the wall and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess that it can, I mean, I'm sure it does make things faster, but
yeah,
I don't know. I tend to like just playing games, especially board games without any digital stuff. I don't even like board games that require apps.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, I just have this thing where I like this like self-contained experience. So yeah. So, but I think we'll touch on that a little bit more actually when we talk about online games, because I think part of that is relevant for that as well. Because we've been using a spreadsheet for some of that.
Yeah.
So thanks, Jacob. Thanks for the email. And then we got a really nice email from Dave Arlington. Yeah, I forwarded this one on to you. So Dave is I'd say quite an active member in the Slack and.
Yes.
And things like that. I see his name pop up a lot. And he said he's been following us from the beginning and has been wanting to send an email for a while. I won't go into all the details. It was very, very nice email. we really appreciate it a lot. It was a lot of really nice feedback and, kind of Dave's thoughts on what we're kind of doing right and what's kind of been working. So I think it was really good to read, and we really, really appreciate it a lot, because I think it was very like valuable feedback.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
In the sense, I was saying to you, like, I don't know what the right word for it is, because it's not constructive criticism, because it wasn't critical, but it felt like a almost like an analytical praise. I don't know how you'd describe it.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really, really enjoyed it as well.
And yeah, he said that was a great email. Thanks, Dave.
He said his wife enjoys it too, because she likes our silly South African accents and our silly sense of humor. So yeah, thank you so much for that.
Yeah,
we just really, really appreciate it. We won't go into all the details, but I just wanted to give you a shout out and say thanks so much. We really did appreciate the email. Yeah, and then we got a last one was an email from Simon, who I think he sent us an email last week. He said, thanks for the shout out on episode 23. This is... this was our new patron, actually, yes. Jensen, yeah.
Simon, yes.
Yeah, so he says, to clarify, he's not the professional League of Legends player from Denmark. Oh, right,
yeah.
although the ancestry of his name is, so I wasn't too far off. He's from Melbourne.
Okay.
And he says, yes, I know Lorcan. So Lorcan is one of our patrons as well, who's also from Down Under.
Right, yes.
Yeah, so I think Lorcan's also from Melbourne as well, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So he said, just like many, he's transitioned from sort of general board gaming to heavier and heavier Euros, and then eventually sort of discovered 18XX. His first 18XX was a 6-player game of 1889.
Whoa.
Which is something I really want to try, actually. Yes. Yeah. I'm actually keen to try it. I've heard mixed reviews of 6-player 89, but I feel like it would be pretty fun. I wouldn't mind trying that.
Yeah, I would definitely try it.
Yeah, so his first game of that, and he actually won.
Wow.
He dumped the red company on someone. What a champ. And then he ended up sort of playing an investor strat from there, which I imagine is quite common in 6-player. There's not that many companies to go around.
Yes, I kind of think the more players there are, the more viable investor strategy is.
Yeah.
Because definitely you can't do it at 2.
Yeah.
So the more players there are, I think
certificate limit's generally low, and you can just try and make sure you always have the piece of the best companies, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he had quite a long break after that. He didn't play 18XX, but he'd been wanting to. And then he started listening to the Train Rush podcast, and he resolved to dip his toes in again.
Mm-hmm.
And then so 2 months ago, he played 89 again. And then he's also since then played... 1824, 18TK, which I think is that Japanese one that's like really hard to get hold of, and like,
wow,
it's hard to get like the rules in English, and you have to like
Tokyo maybe
order it. Yeah, probably. Yeah,
I don't think I've even heard of it. Wow,
I've seen it discussed. Yeah, there was like people ordering like a mass shipment of it from Japan. This whole thing,
oh, cool.
And you know, there's that gamer part of you that's like, ooh, I want to get this too, and you're like, no, Chris, there's like 100 18XXs you don't have that are like way more mainstream and like normal. Yeah, and
easier to get hold of.
Yeah, so I managed to quell that. But yeah, but it's quite strange. That's one of the ones he's played. And he's also played JC's 1828, which we are trying to attempt an online game of.
Yes.
So hopefully we can figure that one out. Yeah.
Yeah.
He said he found our podcast and binge listened to all 20 available episodes.
Oh, cool.
Hey, good job. Thanks.
Wow.
Yeah, so thank you for that. I just want to make sure I didn't miss anyone. I don't think I did. Yeah, emails.
Okay,
cool. Great. Thanks, guys. Yeah, we always like getting feedback from you guys and hearing about your experiences. And yeah, we love questions or things to talk about as well. So if you guys ever have anything like that.
Yeah, topic suggestions or just questions or something.
Yeah, like someone asked about poker chips a couple of episodes ago. And that was cool because we got to sort of revisit it and put the links in the notes. And so hopefully that's the kind of stuff that can be useful for someone.
Yes.
Even listening in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, so should we talk online 18xx?
Yes, okay, yeah.
What has been your experience of it?
So we've played mostly on R18xx. Mm-hmm. That's where I've played the most, and they're mostly 18-30, and I really, really like that. Like, I enjoy playing there a lot.
Yeah,
because it gives me, I don't have a time pressure, so I can actually sit and whip out a calculator if I want to, and you know, if I do this, then I'm gonna have enough money to do that later, kind of thing. I can really like puzzle things out, which I think is good once you know a game to kind of get to know it a bit better. Yeah, so R18xx, I quite like the interface, actually. Once you get used to it, I think it's pretty good. Like, I like the tables. The map is fine. The map is good, actually. The map is good.
Yeah.
But the tables, I think, like, all the information is there that you need. And I think it's laid out pretty well. It is very, very slow at times, though. Like, I think when the US wakes up and they take their turns, it's very slow for us.
Yeah.
So, like, I wonder if there's a way, I don't know who runs that, who hosts it, who maintains it, but if there's a way to, I don't know, add another server or something, or to, I don't know what the license is, if you can host your own server or something, that would be cool to find out. If anyone knows who's responsible for it.
Yeah, there's something, like, sometimes I use it and it's very fast and snappy and stuff, and then sometimes it struggles.
Yeah, I think when America's asleep, it's fast for us.
Yeah, maybe that's the truth. Eh? Maybe that's what's happening.
Yeah, what do you think of R18?
I like it. I think in the beginning, I found it almost like a little bit overwhelming, and I kept like having to cycle because there's basically three tabs.
Mm.
Sort of the stock market, and there's all the finance numbers, and there's the map.
Yeah.
I think once you get used to where everything is, it gets a lot easier.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not the best to do it on a phone, and I mostly end up doing it on my phone because I just don't get a lot of time in front of a computer during the day.
It's not great on a phone. No.
Yeah, so it's not as great, but now I've actually gotten better at looking at it on a phone as well. Mm. Yeah, it's pretty good, I'd say. I mean, it's cool that it's a service that exists.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty well implemented. I think, yeah, like you say, it's just a little bit slow and unresponsive sometimes.
Yeah.
And that can be exacerbated when you use a phone. You're trying to like tap the button. Like, you can't get it to register or whatever. You're like, But it's one of those things where it's obviously like a passion project.
Yes.
Yeah. Essentially, right? And it's not like other stuff where there's like some like polished app that you can download or something like that. But I think for what it does, it does work very well.
Yeah, I know it does work very well. Yeah, I really like it, actually.
Yeah, they don't have a huge amount of games on there. They've got 1830, they've got 1856, which we've been playing a little bit as well. Mm. I think they have 1817 on there.
Yes.
Which is that beastly financial game that you dipped your toe in. And then
were that was an R18, yes.
Can't figure this out.
Yeah.
What else is on there? Anything else? I think there's one or two more, but I'm not sure what they are. Yeah,
there are a couple. But I tend to play the ones I know already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite hard to play a new game online.
Mm.
You definitely can get the hang of it. Like, we're playing our second game of 56 now with some Patreon people, and it's been...
Yeah.
It's better now. I'm like, the first game, I was like super confused for a lot of it. Then I kind of figured it out. Then somehow I won, which was total luck. And then now we're playing the second one, and I'm like, okay, I know more about how this works and how it kind of goes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we've started two games on Board 18.
Yes.
JC's 1828. And what's the other one again?
1889.
1889, right. Yeah, so we're not very far into those. I think we're still in initial private auction. I think we've entered initial stock round.
Yeah, we're in the first stock round for 89 and then 1828. I think you and I both need to read the rules.
Yeah, so I've kind of
come back to,
I've kind of gone over the rules fairly quickly. Yeah, maybe we can talk a bit about 28. So, not that we've played much. There we're still in the private auction.
Right.
Like, we're still very early on there. But the one thing I saw while reading the rules is the first player is the first to pass in the stock round. And then second player is second to pass in the stock round.
Like Terra Mystica.
Yes, rules. Like new Terra Mystica passing, right. Which is awesome. I like that.
Mm.
Because one thing that I have found in 18XXs, and this has happened in like 1830 online for me, is I have nothing to do, but the person to my left has a lot to do. So I keep passing and they keep acting, which means there's no way I'm going to be first in the stock round.
Yeah.
The person to their left will be first in the stock round. So I'm going to be second in a four-player or third in a five-player game, you know, where I'm not doing anything. So I'm getting no benefit from acting later in the future stock round.
I do like the idea of having a little bit more control.
Yes.
And, you know, I think it's Rheinland, hey, where it's the player with the most cash gets priority deal.
Which is another good way to do it.
Which is also something you can control. You can choose to invest less. You're basically investing in priority deal.
Mm.
You're essentially saying, I feel like it's a better use of my money to retain priority than it is to invest in more shares or whatever that are going to grow over time.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of a cool thing to manage, and it feels a little bit more controllable in a way. And I think JC's way of whoever passing order is turn order is perfect as well.
I'm looking forward to actually playing with that and seeing it in action, but it sounds awesome to me.
And it makes you wonder, like, how much of, you know, because so many games just use the basic Lola rule, the left of last action, and it makes you wonder kind of like, is this just sort of like an archaic thing that everyone just adopts? Or is there a reason people think this is the best way to do it?
I think it does allow for interesting strategies and things, but it does feel like you have less control of...
It feels less interesting than some of the other stuff though, right? Like it feels less interesting than JC's rule or the Rheinland rule. It just feels like something about this rule people don't want to mess with a lot of the time.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say it's less interesting. I think it's... gives rise to some interesting situations.
I think it depends on player count.
But you don't have control.
That's like in our five-player game of 1830, I'm like, I mean, I feel totally like at the mercy of that thing.
Yeah.
To some extent. But I suppose there's ways of predicting who's going to act last and sort of planning accordingly and things like that. So it's not... It may be out of your control, but you can also plan for it sometimes.
Yeah, you can. And I also, you have to think ahead in that, I think. So if you want to be first in a later stock round, you'll have to take some actions now that might not make the most financial sense. Like you might have to buy a couple of shares in the company now, even though you know they're going to devalue, just so that you don't have to buy those same shares in the next stock round and spend more actions. So by doing it earlier, you increase your chances of being earlier in turn order.
And something like that would be particularly true in 1828, right? Where it's you can pass first.
Yeah.
That kind of thing is way more prevalent than that. The problem I have in like a five-player 1830 is like if the dude to your left just constantly like is managing his portfolio or just a very active in the stock round kind of person.
Yeah.
His plans are sort of around that. You're just kind of doomed to going almost last every time.
Yeah. But what I've also found in that is sometimes I know I'm lost already, and then I can do more because I'm lost already. So I might as well do some more in this stock round.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, I think.
Yeah. But I'd be happy to see more designs challenging that rule.
Yeah.
Like sort of turning it on its head or just trying something different.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we like the one that Rheinland does, but Rheinland is still clockwise after that.
Right.
So it's still whoever has the most money is first and then clockwise. So your control is also limited. The JC system, the Terra Mystica new system, I think I'm very interested to see how it plays out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So board 18 though, how do you feel about board 18? Because we have had admittedly very limited experience with that one compared to our 18XX.
Yeah. So I like the look of the map in board 18. We haven't done any operating rounds yet. So we haven't actually interacted with the map. I have in our one game been putting tokens on par values that people have announced in the chat. I think the downside to board 18 is you basically need three different apps to be able to play that. You need board 18 for the map, you need some facility to chat to announce your actions to each other, and you need a spreadsheet
to keep. And that's what I've found a massive pain in the ass trying to do it on my phone.
Yeah.
And what also was super annoying was I had to like switch back to the spreadsheet to like or something. I was trying to like see which company was which.
Right. Yeah, you so, switch between the map and the spreadsheet.
Yeah, so I'd go to the map and then I'd go, okay, so the blue company is this one over here. What's that one called? Because the map we're using, it's Carthaginian's map, right? Which is beautiful, but I understand now why some people don't like it.
Yeah.
Because it's so pretty, but I'm like, just give me the information. Just I think show I've me become where this that person, is. Man. I've become the like utilitarian 18XX person. Like, just give me the yellow tiles with the like very clear design.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. I never thought I'd be that person. But playing on this map now, I'm like, ah, what the hell is this, man? Like, I've played 89 so many times and I can't figure out like what this company's called. I think it's called this.
Yeah.
So I'd look at the map and see where that one is located. I'd like look at the weird little icon and then go to the stock page of the Board 18 thing and check what it was called.
Yes.
And then go back to our spreadsheet and see if anyone had floated that company.
I've been through the same process on that game, yeah.
And that has been driving me insane.
Yeah. I'm doing it at the PC, so it's not so bad. But so that downside that I said was you basically need three different apps. The other downside is that with the spreadsheet part of it, that spreadsheet, we're only playing two games so far, but those two spreadsheets are vastly different from each other.
Yeah.
Like the layout and everything is significantly different. I mean, I can follow it, I can read it, but it took me a little while to figure out the first spreadsheet, and then I had to look at the second spreadsheet for a little while because it's not the same layout as the first spreadsheet. So, I mean, those spreadsheets are just people who make them, and they do a good job. I mean,
yeah,
obviously it's all community driven and the community contributes and the spreadsheets improve over time, but they do differ fairly significantly from each other, I think.
And I found them a lot of upkeep to them. So like now I'm wondering, like, so for example, if I run my company or whatever, I have to enter the revenue manually. I'm going to have to adjust the stock value manually.
Yeah.
Which means I'm going to have to go and look.
Yeah. Yes, there's no rules implementation. The only semi-rules implementation is the spreadsheet. Like the spreadsheet knows if a share pays 6, then you have 6 of those, so you get 36. That the spreadsheet will calculate for you.
Right.
But the spreadsheet is not going to move the token on board 18 or anything. So, yeah, so in that way, it's kind of like playing on a table. You have to do all those things yourself.
But that's kind of the thing. I'll have to go to the board 18, I'll have to move the token up, and then I'll have to go back to the spreadsheet and manually enter the new value for the stock.
Oh, right. Yes, you will. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then you have to, yeah. So, I don't know. I think it's fine. It would probably be way less admin at a computer. On my phone, it's pretty annoying because it's like you having to pinch zoom and like squint and like figure out what's what. And maybe you'll get more used to it. Like I know one of the guys who's playing with Noodles, one of our Patreons, he says he prefers Board 18 to RR18XX. Mm. So there must be an aspect of it that's easier. Maybe once you get used to it, you just do it quickly.
I think he got frustrated with the slowness of RR18.
Like the actual server slowness?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that can be when it is when it's really slow,
then
it gets super annoying.
Yeah.
I was trying to take my turn once and I just clicked and I just stared at it for minutes.
Yeah.
And it was like loading. I was like, oh no. Yeah. Yeah, we need to get like a funding campaign together.
Yes.
Yeah. There needs to be like a donate button on the side so we can like donate to
increase
the servers.
Get some
more
servers or whatever is needed. Yeah. So I mean like Board 18 looks cool to me. I'm playing on a desktop when I play, so I'm just switching between tabs in a browser. So it's not that painful. And I don't mind spreadsheets. I don't know if you ever played EVE Online.
No, I have not, because it sounded like, I've always heard it referred to as Excel in space.
Exactly. It's spreadsheets in space. So I played that for a bit, so I don't mind spreadsheets.
Yeah, that just seemed like a second job, that game. It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I had a friend who got super into it and I was like, this just sounds like work. And like the weird thing about it is it can be work because some people made like real money playing that game.
Oh, some people did, yeah.
Like there were banks, like that game is insane.
There are stock trading strategies for that game. It's an amazing game, but it's fun work though, but it's...
I just like watching the videos about like the biggest heists and clan wars and...
Yeah.
The guy who like started a bank and then everyone just trusted him, and one day just literally upped with everyone's money and was like, oh, suckers.
Did you read that one about the guy who infiltrated a rival corporation.
Yeah.
Oh man, amazing stories from that.
Yeah, Eve Online has great stories. If you ever have time, like Google, like I don't know, like best Eve Online events or stories or whatever. Yeah. It's actually really interesting to read. Even as someone who's never played the game, I loved reading the stories about them.
Yeah.
Very, very cool.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's spreadsheets in space. So I don't mind spreadsheets on Rails so much either.
Yeah, so I'm like I'm still a little bit on the fence about Board 18. I would honestly say though, if you are like a new player, just don't. I wouldn't mess with Board 18.
Yeah.
You have to know the rules really, really well to the games. Like you have to make sure you're doing everything correctly.
Yeah,
because it's all manual.
Yeah.
So one of the nice things actually about RR18XX is you can actually learn to some extent. You can kind of learn the rules.
Yes.
Like if you're unsure about something, you can kind of be like, can I build a tile here? Oh, no, I can't.
Yeah.
You know, because the game will say like, nope.
Yeah.
Or can I sell shares before I've done this? Yeah. Yes. Nope. Or nope, you can't, right? Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of useful in that way. If you're not super familiar with all the like minutiae of the rules, you can actually learn some stuff playing it. I think it's a cool way to play 1830. I mean, I think that's what most people would be playing on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd recommend that. The thing about that is that you need like a registration and password and stuff. They don't make it publicly available because they don't want it to get overloaded.
Yeah, which it is already, I think. So.
Yeah, but if you find your way to the 18XX Slack and you ask in there, someone will message it to you.
Yeah.
Basically, the idea is sort of if you care enough to find it.
Yeah.
Then you've kind of earned it.
Yes, yeah.
And it's not hard to find. This isn't like a secret society, right? Yeah. It's just like if you ask in one of the community areas, whatever, you know. I don't know, maybe they wouldn't even mind if someone emailed us to ask. Maybe it's fine for us to.
I don't know, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. I don't want to step on any toes, but I assume that that's probably fine as well.
Yeah, I would really like to know if you're able to run your own server or something, though. That could be cool.
Yeah, I don't know how that works at all.
Yeah, like if we had a server in South Africa for South African people or something, it might be faster and stuff. Yeah.
You might be able to contact the guy, maybe his contact info on the site, maybe.
I've casually looked and didn't find anything, but I haven't looked in detail. I haven't spent much time.
Okay, maybe we can put out some feelers and
figure
that out. But yeah, so 1830.
Mm.
How have you felt about our games of 1830?
I still like 1830 a lot.
Yo, man, it's been a trial by fire for me. Like, it's actually very helpful to play with people who are very experienced.
Yeah.
Because I found the games to be brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal. I think Joe is the most brutal. So Joe is one of the first guys I think who ever emailed us, sort of a long-time listener of the show. And our first online game was with him. And, yo...
He's good. I think he's very good.
Man. He's good, man. He's super good. Joe, you're too good. I don't like you. Damn British people. But yeah, he's very, very good. And like, he does a lot of shuffling around.
Yeah.
But he will just like trash your stock before breakfast and move on to the next thing. Like, playing with him has been a real lesson. Oh man, yeah. Rudy sent me such a funny message about it. He's like, every company I start, he's like, this Joe guy has floated four companies and dumped three in the same stock round or something like that. Because it's literally like all of Rudy's stock was getting trashed. And you just look and he's got like the highest net worth and you're like...
He always has the highest net worth. I don't know how.
Yeah, he's just dumping things left and right.
Yeah.
I like the way he plays. It's very aggressive and it's very like active.
Yes, yeah.
So it's very, very cool actually to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think stuff like that has been a real lesson.
Mm.
Another thing I've experienced with these 1830 games, right, is that you can play totally different games depending on who you're playing with.
Yeah.
These games are so player driven. You might think you know the basic cycle of how a game like this works.
Yeah.
And it'll be totally turned on its head by someone else.
Yeah.
So our game, we're having a podcast contest. I don't know if we've mentioned this.
No, we haven't. Against the Dudes on a Map guys.
Dads on a Map, yeah.
Oh, Dads on a Map, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, so the Dads on a Map podcast is like a regular board game podcast, but they've been dipping their toes in 18XX. So we kind of knew them from the Cardboard Reality Slack and all that. So we're kind of having like a friendly contest. So there's two of them and two of us. So we said like no holds barred. Everyone plays for themselves, but
no collusion.
Yeah, no collusion at all. Like, so Fred and I can't collude or whatever. But
or discuss strategy or anything.
Whoever wins for their podcast, yes. Essentially.
Yeah.
And that has been such a weird game.
It has been.
So Sanchez, like, bought presidencies for, like, three companies, and I can't figure out why.
He set the par value for... Three or four, maybe.
Yeah, but I'm like, Sanchez,
and he's not floating.
Your money's dying in there. What are you doing, man? Like, super weird. And I had this company where, so I had New York, New Haven, and I went north, which is sort of the like slow strat. If you go northwest kind of thing, like through Albany, the New York Tower, and then you go sort of northwest. That's kind of like, there's a way to play New York, New Haven where you buy a bunch of two trains and like, just basically run a lot of routes very quickly, or you can go the slower, more long game strategy, which is the one I'm doing, where you kind of go northwest. So I didn't have like, I think I didn't have like a valuable private or something like that. I can't remember. And I think that's why I went the long game one. But so it was the weirdest thing because we pushed trains so slowly.
Well, I think it's because he's got those companies tied up that aren't floating.
So we're pushing trains insanely slowly in that game. Yeah. So I can't build the tile that I need to build because I have to sell my company, my private, in order to build on that hex.
Mm.
And I can't sell the private because you're not in the three trains yet.
Right.
So for like 3 hours, I just didn't build a tile.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to buy the last two trains and a three train myself. Because I didn't have the routes to run it. So I was like, I'm happy. I'm just going to run this two route over and over until someone else buys a three train. Then I'll build up there.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't being threatened by anything.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's the right way to play, but it was such a weird way to play.
Yeah.
So, yeah, James floated Pennsylvania at 100,
yeah.
The first company. He just floated at 100. I'm like, what is going on? So
I'm keen to see how this plays out.
So yeah, I think it's probably like there's a fair dose probably of inexperience there. I think James and Sanchez are both relatively new to 1886, as are we.
Mm.
We're still relatively new, I'd say. So... yeah, it's pretty funny. It's like playing that game and then playing this game with Joe where like 14 companies have been dumped and your stock is in the brown zone and your net worth is at zero and
you're
just like ready to resign, you know? You're like, okay.
It was very interesting, yeah. Yeah. The interesting thing about Sanchez floating, well, not floating, parring those companies and not floating them is he can't sell those shares.
Yeah.
But if the game ends now, he wins because those shares still have the value that they have that they were parred at.
Right.
So you would still convert them to that price, even though you can't sell them.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, his net worth is like pretty high.
Yeah.
It's like super weird. That's why I can't figure out, is this like the dumbest thing ever? Or has he got like some kind of like, this is like some smart move that I don't know about?
Yeah,
Sanchez, what are you up to, man? What are you up to?
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, so that was pretty weird. So, but 1830 in general is, I can't figure out if it's the people we're playing with or if it's just a much, much harsher game.
Mm.
I feel like it's super harsh.
So the one thing that got me, I think it's in this Dads on a Map game, is the only yellow city tile is the straight city. And there are only four of them available, and at one point we were out of them. They were all on the board.
Yeah,
and I was thinking of floating a company and knowing, okay, but I need this tile in order to float. So there was one company that I could float, which I did float, which it would take 2 hours before I needed that tile, and then I kind of maneuvered it so that the first company that I floated would operate just before my second company,
right?
And then the first company could free one of those straight city tiles for the second company, which is an interesting kind of thing you have to think about, because not all companies could be floated because some of them start with no yellow tile on their home tile,
yeah.
So they need that straight city
that
tile.
Happened to Pear in one of our games, remember?
Yeah.
He floated a company and he couldn't build for it.
Yeah.
And it was funny because in that stock round I'd actually noticed that. So I was like so impressed with myself for actually noticing that, because I wanted to power a company. I was like, wait, but I can't.
I only noticed it because we spoke about
what's
happening to Pear, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of crazy. But
the
rough edges in that game, man, like the stock trashing is brutal.
Oh yeah. In one of the games, it might be that one as well, I think I bought PRR, and then it was one of those situations where, okay, I'm last to act regardless. Like, everyone else is passing, I'm last to act. So I might as well do more. And then I did a little bit of math and saw, okay, PRR is valued at 100. If I sell this, I can buy two other shares. I'm still a couple of shares away from the cert limit. So I thought, let's do that. Let's rather get two certificates instead of one.
Right.
So in the same stock round, I actually bought PRR and then sold it and then bought two other shares just because I knew I was going to be last to act anyway. But the interesting thing that that does as well is it drops PRR down one spot on the stock market, which after two ORs, which we were in, is a difference of $15 per share in increase in value. So stuff like that is still very interesting that you can
do. It adds up, man. I mean, I had this one company that literally can't get out of like the 30 range. Like every opportunity, someone just sells that thing. It's like, yo, I've had some companies that just sit there dying. And like, I try to work their way out and someone's like, oh, I'll sell these two shares since you've moved it up a bit. I'm like, no. And I can't get rid of it. Yo.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You see your net worth plummet, man.
It's fun.
Yeah, 1830 is cool, but I would say it's kind of a tricky game. It's actually a lot trickier, I think, than 89.
I don't think it's a tricky game for a first game, as long as you're playing with other people who are fairly new to it. But if you're playing against experienced people, it can be pretty brutal.
I feel like there's a lot of weird things to it, though. Like the tile set is super restricted. Yes, the cities only go straight. The map is actually quite a lot different as well. There's a lot of like weird things happening with the map.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. The more I play it, the more I feel like there's a lot of sharp edges to it.
Yeah, but I also think we pick up more of the edge cases with more experience.
I mean, I think I'm trying to think of the first time we played and I don't think we thought it was that bad. I think we felt the restriction with the tiles. But
But that's why I think if you're playing with other fairly new people, I think it's fine to play.
It's probably okay, But there's actually a lot of subtle things going on in that game.
Yeah, there are.
And the more we play it, I feel like the more we kind of unlock in that sense.
Yeah, but I think that's the case with most 18XXs. I feel like we haven't done that with 46 yet, for example.
Yeah.
We still need to discover some things there.
Yeah, we need to try a very aggressive train push in that game and see how that goes.
Yeah, just see if we can ruin some friendships in that game.
Yeah, exactly. Just like force our way into brown phase, like in the second hour or whatever.
Yeah, just go all out and see how much you can do.
Yeah, just a mad rush. I'm keen to see how that plays out. I'm definitely going to do that the next time we play, like 100%. I don't care if I lose horribly.
Yeah.
I've got to the point now with 18XX where like, I don't even, like, obviously you always want to win.
Yeah.
But I just want to fiddle with it. Like, I just want to try new things. That's what I was doing with 49 the other day. I was like, let me just try this and see how it works. Because I feel like you can learn so much.
Yeah, you can, definitely. Yeah.
We actually, you did something interesting in our 89 game. And I feel like you had a master plan. Are you going to share this master plan with us? When you bought the first private super early. And I feel like you were setting me up to buy the
No. I've been playing so many games. Let me think what I was trying to do.
This is the Board 18 one. And even Noodles commented, he's like, you bought that first one super early. Because like, we didn't even have bids in on everything. And you just snapped up the first one.
No, I think there was one bid in and I bought it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think I didn't much care about all of the others. I also knew that the bid was on the third company, so I could get away with buying the first one without that cascade happening. Someone else could still outbid on that third one and stuff. So I figured I would still have a chance to get other bids in.
I thought you kind of planned it because in 89, the G company is supposed to be not great, right? That's the fairy one that pays 30 and then eventually pays 50 if you don't sell it or whatever. And I thought that you were trying to avoid or like force someone else into buying that. So I bought the port one at face value. Then you got option on some other one. And then you ended up with like the highest revenue and it was on me if I wanted to buy the G company. And I had the lowest revenue and I was like, Fred, you bastard. You've like masterminded this.
Yeah, no, okay. I don't think I masterminded it that far back. Okay. I just saw a small opportunity at the time and took it. I think it was just, to me, it felt like it was the best thing I could do at the time.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's always interesting with private auctions. I know we've spoken about this in terms of 1830, but as soon as someone buys the first one outright, you just trigger this whole thing and you give people opportunity to get good privates at face value.
Yeah.
And generally, you don't want to allow people to buy stuff at face value, especially the more expensive ones.
Yeah.
Which I think is quite interesting because, and I think that's why everyone was kind of surprised. Mm. Like, oh. But it also then, funny enough, gave you option for a decent private.
Yes. Yeah.
At face value, which is why I thought you might have done it.
Yeah.
Because you ended up with the first one and like maybe the fourth
one. One of the high paying ones.
Yeah. One of the higher paying ones. Yeah. So I thought maybe you'd sort of figured this out and thought, yeah, I'll give up other privates.
Yeah, and I can't take complete credit for that. It just felt like it was the best I could do at the time.
But if you think about it, you potentially ended up the best off.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
You had enough money left afloat and you had two privates, one of them the low-paying one and one of them a relatively high-paying one. Whereas everyone else ended up with like one, maybe?
I don't think I have got enough to float yet, though. I think I'm short.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Ha!
So, yeah, it wasn't perfect. But we'll see.
You bought a presidency anyway, even though you don't have to float.
I did.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So, well, I guess I can go into my thinking there.
Yeah, if you want.
So, I was thinking, like, I can't float. I don't want to help other people float. Like, I still think it feels bad to help someone else float in full cap games.
Mm.
Because it floats at 50%, right?
Yeah.
So, let's say you're floating a company. If you put in 50% of the money and you gain control of 100% of the money in a full cap game. If I help you float, then I put in 10% of the money. Let's say you put in 40% of the money and you gain control of 100% of the money. So, to me, in full cap, that feels bad. Like, I don't think...
Okay.
I don't want to help other people float. After you've put in your 50%, then I'll maybe buy a share, you know? Because... It's what's done is done. The company's floated. But now I get a cut of profits you make.
Mm.
But I wasn't helping you to float it. So I was thinking, okay, I can't afford to float now. I don't want to help anyone else float. Passing just feels bad. So I was like, okay, if I'm going to float next stock round, I might as well start buying up the shares now that I want to buy next stock round. If I don't want to help anyone else float now... Instead of just having my money sit and do nothing, I might as well have it sit in shares that don't do anything and save myself a couple of actions in the next stock round. So that's basically what I'm doing. Is if no one helps me to float, then I'm going to float in the next stock round.
I think it's not a bad idea because let's say you buy into someone else's company, right? So your options are basically, either help someone float, you don't want to do that. You can wait for someone to get to 50%, then buy, let's say, the other 40% of their company, right? Then what you could do is in the next stock round, you could sell those shares just to damage their stock, but you lose money because their stock thing would have moved down.
Yeah.
So unless you want to stay in that company for a while... selling just to damage their stock, I don't even think that's really worth it because you're going to lose money in the transaction, right? And there's always the risk, I suppose, that they manage to get money out of it in the first stock round and then just dump it on you anyway, which wouldn't
be great. I was also thinking I could wait until someone floats something and then buy a share, but instead of waiting by passing, I might as well start floating the company I actually want to float. And I still have the option of slowing down my buying of my own shares and buying a share of someone else.
I think it makes sense because you don't lose money. I mean, essentially...
The money's tied up, but I'm not losing it.
Yeah, if you invest money in any other company in the first stock round...
You're going to lose money.
Lose money.
In anything that floats, you're losing money. Yeah.
You'll lose money. So if you want to float your own company, and if one revenue payment is enough to get you to 50%, I actually think it makes sense to just...
Yeah. So my privates will pay enough for me to be able to float in the next stock
round. Buy the fifth share, I think makes it worth it then just to do that.
Yeah,
then
so I'm going to buy four now and then buy my fifth one next one. And then because I'm only taking one action potentially, maybe I'm first to act in the third stock round.
Yeah.
So that's my thinking.
The third stock round is an important one.
Mm. Yeah, so we'll see.
I think that makes sense in terms of what to do with your money in the initial stock round if you... Yeah, if you can't.
Mm. If you can't float,
If you can't float, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I get to set the par value on the company I really want, and I get to be ahead in the company I want. So, yeah.
Nice, man.
Mm.
Okay.
We'll see.
Cool. Yeah, let's see what happens.
Yeah.
We've been blabbing on for a while. Should we move on, do you think?
Yes.
What are we going to talk about, South African things? We're going to hide something
car else. Car guards.
Car guards. Okay. I don't think we've spoken about car guards before.
I think we may have mentioned them, but very briefly.
Yeah, so this is a very uniquely South African thing, I think. So South Africa has quite a lot of free parking. I don't know if that's normal, but we have a lot of free parking. So if you go to shopping malls and stuff, that's generally paid parking.
It's actually abnormal to pay for parking. in most of
them. Yeah.
In the UK, I think it happens, but in the US, I don't think it happens.
Oh, they don't pay for parking that much, yeah?
Not at shopping.
I suppose if you got like Walmart,
that's what we call a shopping center, they would call like a mall or something.
Yeah.
Like the thinking is supposed to be you want people to come here, don't charge them to come here.
Right, right. Okay, so maybe I'm wrong. Yeah, yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking of the UK where I think like parking is like
UK, you have
crazy difficult.
Pay and display type of thing.
And you have to like pay to like go into like downtown London and stuff. So yeah. All that kind of jazz. So yeah, I guess it varies. But
yeah,
our shopping, we have underground parking at a lot of like shopping malls and stuff. And that generally you have to pay for.
Yes.
But there's a lot of free parking otherwise. So anywhere you go that has free parking, there will be car guards.
Yeah.
So these are like, these are not trained positions. Literally, to be a car guard, you just need one of those high-vis vests.
Yes.
And you're set.
Yeah.
Congratulations, you are now a car guard. So I think it's basically like, I suppose, a natural consequence of having a country with a lot of poverty and high unemployment. But essentially what happens is these dudes mill around and essentially will watch your car for you. Or so they say, right?
Yeah.
And they'll like help you with your trolley or shopping cart or whatever, stuff like that, right? Take it back for you, for example, things like that. Yeah. So basically, you can tip these guys, give them a few rand or whatever. Like you see them everywhere. So you're not doling out big tips. This is like pretty small amounts of money, but obviously for them, it kind of adds up.
Yeah.
I would say it's not necessarily expected.
No. It's not, but it's generally you do it.
Yeah, you know? My general rule is if I have coins, I'll give them.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just don't have coins because cash is... I just swipe for everything. I'm that guy who swipes for like a Coke, you know? Yeah. So oftentimes I don't have cash or whatever, in which case I don't have anything to give. But they generally are pretty well-natured. They don't really like pitch a fit or whatever. You don't give them something. I think a lot of people just wave and say thanks and move on. So yeah, you're not really obligated to, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically just a bunch of dudes milling around in like yellow and orange vests.
Yeah.
And like when you park, they'll be like, they'll show you where parking space is.
Yes.
They'll make sure that they've got your attention, that you know they exist. Like, hey man, I'll watch your car for you.
Yeah.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if they'd actually do anything if anyone was like, what do you think about it in terms of actual added security?
Zero.
Do you think so?
Yes. Or very, very little. So I was actually going to ask you if you've had bad experiences with car guards. So I've actually had a friend whose car got stolen at a shopping mall where there are those car guards.
Oh.
And I actually phoned the company. So there's a company that gathers these people and goes and drops them off and, you know.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I phoned the company and said, like, listen, my friend's car got stolen in this parking lot, broad daylight, where you have car guards. And the guy was very like apologetic, blah, blah, blah. He would look into it and everything. But then I was thinking afterwards, like you typically give them what, like 5 rand?
Yeah.
If you went up to one of them and said, here's 50 bucks, go away for half an hour.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
They would do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely, they would do that.
Yeah.
So from that point of view, I don't think there's much security.
But yeah, I mean, and look, I don't expect some dude to put his life on the line, to be honest, either.
But I do think it's better than just begging for money.
Oh, I do think so. I think that there's some added security.
Mm.
Like, I do buy into the fact that, like, maybe just having people there is somewhat of a deterrent.
Yes.
Like, if you feel like there's someone there to watch you break into a car, I feel like you're going to be a little bit less likely to do it. So, I don't know. I kind of like that they exist in a way. They don't bother me at all. I think it's a cool way to, yeah, like you say, that's kind of a very easy, accessible way to make a bit of cash. And it feels like you are providing some kind of a service.
Yeah, you're doing something at least, yeah.
Yeah, which is cool. And they're all generally really friendly, nice guys.
Yeah.
So they're cool too.
Yeah, I always give something when I can. So
yeah, exactly, right? So yeah, man, I don't know. I think that, yeah, it's kind of interesting, but I do wonder. I don't know. I think that like, yeah, if you're like a proper hijacking crew or whatever, you probably don't give a crap about a car guard. But I think it probably limits to some extent petty crime.
Like casual, opportunistic. Like
casual smash a window, grab something off a seat stuff. Yeah. Because that is the case where I think some car guards might make a noise or make a fuss or like
cost. And there have been stories of guys stopping robberies and things. And they're also... I've heard things where, for example, someone left their window open, their car window open, and it started raining. And the car guards put some plastic over the window to cover it to keep the rain out, you know, that kind of thing. So
yeah, because at the end of that, they're actually just nice dudes. I mean, a lot of these guys are just really regular, normal people.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, they just are hard times or is sort of below the poverty line or whatever you call it, but they're not bad people. So they're just friendly and nice and they're happy to help if something like that arises. So I would actually hope that if someone tried to like actually steal my car, they didn't intervene though.
Yeah.
I don't want them.
It's not worth their lives.
No, exactly, man. You never know, especially in this country. Like you don't know if someone's got some kind of weapon or something. Yeah. If someone's going to the trouble to actually steal a car, let my car go, man.
Yeah.
It's fine. Yeah. You know, I think they're really just there as a visual deterrent.
Yeah.
If you choose to ignore them and carry on, I don't really want them to like be a hero, right?
Yeah. No, same.
Yeah. I guess that's fair enough.
Mm.
Sweet, guys. Yeah. Cool. So if you ever come to South Africa and you park pretty much anywhere where you haven't paid for the parking, you'll see those dudes. Yeah. You won't find them in paid parking areas because that has its own security and stuff. But yeah, anywhere you don't pay for parking, you'll see them milling around. Cool. Anyway, yeah. Thanks very much for listening, guys.
Yes. Thanks very much.
Yeah. Check you next time.
Bye.
Cheers.
If you would like to get in touch with us, we are at derailed18xx on Instagram and Twitter. You can email us, derailed18xx@gmail.com, and we're on Patreon at patreon.com/derailed18xx. Thanks for listening.